Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, Wednesday afternoon, September 4th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us in the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. Couples that are dating may be best served with a money talk early in the relationship. We'll talk about that in our next segment. But right now, the report on job openings in July mirrors a softening employment market. Joining us now on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Michelle Reisdorf, Chicago jobs expert with the Robert Half Company in Chicago. Michelle, thank you for joining us today. And according to the latest job opening survey, known in the business as the JOLTS report, there is now one job for every job seeker, essentially. And that is down from two jobs for every one person just a couple of years ago.
Yes, that is correct. We have seen the job market cool in recent months. And, you know, the overall kind of level of job openings has been stagnant while we've seen unemployment, rise a bit in the market. And so definitely those numbers have come down, though it's still good in the sense that there is at least one job opening for every person in the market.
Yeah, it's one thing to say that the job market is weakening, but it's weak compared to a couple of years ago. But if you look at it on a bar graph form, it seems like the job market is recovering or reaching its pre-pandemic equilibrium. It's a market similar to what we saw in 2018 and 2019.
Absolutely. You know, what we feel is that the market is more so normalizing, right? What we saw, you know, right after the pandemic was, you know, just kind of unheard of with two and three jobs available for every candidate looking, where now we've seen this normalization. So it's become more equal in that employee to employer relationship in that job search process.
And then what does this mean for you if you are looking for a job right now? Maybe you're trying to see if the grass is truly greener on the other side, professionally speaking, trying to grow in your career, or maybe you are just a college graduate making your way in the working world. What can you expect when you start to put your name and resume out there?
Yeah, you know, despite the softening in the job market, many companies continue to face hiring challenges or finding that highly skilled talent. And so if you are a job seeker at this point, you need to make sure that you are opening yourself up to every opportunity that's out there. Something you and I have talked about many times, Rob, is getting your network very, very connected into the job you're looking for, the type of company you want, et cetera. And being persistent in that approach for the job hunt. You can't just assume now you're going to send out a handful of resumes and get 10 offers. You might have to put a little bit more work and effort into that job search than you have in the past. But there are definitely openings still available. There's so much pent-up demand from companies that didn't necessarily hire, you know, in the first half of 2024. There are jobs available for candidates if you are diligent about your search.
And then let's talk about seasonality. There was a phrase that I saw on LinkedIn not too long ago, and that was the September surge. Is there more hiring or are there more openings in professional services as we approach the end of the year?
Yes, absolutely. Seasonal contract hiring does pick up typically following Labor Day, and that will be due to year-end initiatives or end-of-year project needs, or, you know, as I talked about, maybe employers that were apprehensive at hiring in the beginning of the year, you know, now realize they have this pent-up demand and they need to make some hiring decisions in the back half of the year. So we do absolutely see a pickup starting Labor Day and all the way through the end of the year.
Michelle Reisdorf, Chicago jobs expert, Robert Half Company in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up, helping couples manage money in collaboration.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday, and a discussion of your financial philosophy can be important, even early in a relationship. Let's get some help from navigating the tricky waters from Ed Jurtzen, certified financial planner and founder of the Engage Wealth Group in Chicago, the website engagewealthgroup.com. Ed, thank you for joining us today. And this is something I have said quite a bit on the Noon Business Hour, and that is if you are a financial planner, it seems like 20% of your job is actual dollars and cents, and 80% of the job is being a psychologist without a degree.
Yeah, Rob, it's that money coach part that we really embrace because, again, when it comes to relationships, relationships and money, things can go well and things can't go well. And so when we're talking about couples, especially young couples, right, we want to dispel the myth that opposites attract, especially when it comes to personal finances, because opposite approaches to spending, saving, and long-term goals can create some serious strains on a relationship.
And when and having that conversation early on, even your philosophy towards spending and saving and long-term goals, that can really unlock a lot of other insight into your personality, and you can really determine at that point are those personalities compatible?
And that's it. You had mentioned the word rep, compatibility, and that's huge, right? And we're big fans on financial transparency. Again, it's not during the first date or the second date, but financial transparency is key at some point in the relationship. Because what you don't want, Rob, is any surprises, such as student loans or credit card debt or a challenged credit history. Because again, you know, it may be alluding to a certain type of personality or just misaligned goals. So having that conversation at some point in time may feel difficult, but it's critically important.
We're talking about why your financial philosophy could be very revealing in a relationship with Ed Jurtzen, certified financial planner, founder of the Engage Wealth Group in Chicago. And then, Ed, another thing that may, you know, come to bear in trying to bring two personalities together and to make that work over the long term is that your attitudes toward money could also be informed by your parents. I mean, did you grow up wealthy where the bank of mom and dad took care of all of your issues, or did you grow up around parents where money was tight and it was a source of anxiety for your parents and a source of friction?
It's an excellent point, Robin. We often refer this as to money DNA. Each of us has our money DNA, our own money experience. And so we're shaped by those around us. And so, yes, I mean, you've got some parents who are savers, and that just kind of transcends down to the child. And then you've got parents who may not have saved a dime, and that child has basically taken on that personality. So, again, when couples are talking about things like starting a family, housing arrangement, career goals, again, having that like-minded approach in those future goals, you can overcome a lot of things. Because as you know, Rob, you know, we plan and God laughs. And so ultimately, whether you have a job or lose your job or things come your way, being compatible from a financial standpoint, not exact, but being compatible is really important to help you navigate those years into the future.
And I would imagine in your line of work and in the course of all the people you have encountered, I would imagine we would be stunned by the amount of couples who do not have that conversation, and then they learn a very hard lesson later on.
Yeah, especially with younger couples, Rob, you want to kind of get that out of the way. And I think the younger generation is much more transparent, let's say, than the older generation. But ultimately, yes. I mean, typically, I joke that I have a PhD in marital psychology, because very rarely do I see a couple who are completely aligned on everything. And that's okay. It's just how you navigate those differences is sort of the key. And again, having an open-minded approach where they're not too opposite, because again, we don't want too many troubles, but ultimately, yes. Having that common vision, that common goal on what the two of you are looking to accomplish goes a great long way in terms of having that that peace of mind again and that relationship moving forward.
Ed Jurtzen, certified financial planner, founder of the Engage Wealth Group in Chicago, the website engagewealthgroup.com. Coming up next, companies that give shareholders perks and rewards.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Being a shareholder of certain companies can bring with it some great perks. Let's discuss some of them with Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services and publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast newsletter based in Hammond. Chuck, thank you for joining us today. Now, when we have the Stock Picker Monday segment, we talk about the various mathematical and business reasons to own a particular stock. We're talking about P.E. ratios and things like that. But what if you just buy a particular stock because you want the perks that come with owning that stock?
Well, hopefully that's not the only reason you do it, but it certainly is kind of a nice kicker to owning the stock. You know, for example, a number of kind of travel-related companies offer discounts if you're a shareholder. Prominent ones are in the cruise line industry. You have Norwegian Cruise Lines, which also has the Regent Cruise Line. They offer up to $250 in onboard credits, depending on the length of your trip. The same with Carnival, which has the Carnival brand, Princess, Holland America, and Costa. They offer up to $200, $250 in onboard credits. And then finally, Royal Caribbean offers up to $1,000 in onboard credits, depending on the length of your trip. And Royal Caribbean also has a Celebrity and Silver Sea line. So cruises are a big deal when it comes to kind of shareholder discounts.
And the same thing goes for hotels. There's also a shareholder portal to get deals on hotel rooms with IHG. And you can also get maybe some discounts through the Ford Motor Company, too, if you own some Ford stock.
You can, and again, there's how you become aware of these things is that, you know, most people when they get information from a company, I shouldn't say most, but I think a lot of people when they get information in the mail from a company, whether it's an annual report or a dividend confirmation, they kind of barely read it and throw it out. But a lot of these discounts, if the company offers them, are discussed on those mails that go directly to shareholders. So it pays to maybe spend a minute or two looking through that, especially annual reports and any quarterly information you might get to see if there are discounts.
We're talking about shareholder perks with Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services in Hammond, Indiana. Now, you have to actually own the stock directly. You cannot have it as part of some type of retirement fund mixture or maybe an ETF. You have to actually go up to the Ford Motor Company and purchase the stock directly.
Yes, in many cases, you need to be the shareholder of record and not holding the stock in what's called street name in order to get these discounts. And one of the nicest discounts, quite frankly, is that there are probably somewhere around 30 to 40 companies out there that actually, for investors that own the stock directly through the company's dividend reinvestment plan, they'll actually allow you to buy stock at a discount to the market price. One of these companies that we like quite a bit is a company called One Oak, OKE, and they leave themselves the option of providing up to a 5% discount on shares purchased directly through the company's dividend reinvestment plan. They don't offer the discount all the time, but they and a number of other companies, many of which are in the utility and real estate investment trust areas, will offer discounts periodically on shares purchased with both reinvested dividends as well as additional optional investments that you can make through the company's dividend reinvestment plan.
Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services, publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast Newsletter in Hammond.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Gunshots are fired inside a high school in Georgia. The latest next, coming up at a CBS News special report. Personal Finance Wednesday, finding a destination for your wealth while you're still living. And a single cocktail is making a major splash at the U.S. Open in tennis and on social media. Business, the markets are mixed right now. The Dow is down 58 points, NASDAQ up 1.25, the S&P 500 down 8. AccuWeather says for the rest of today, plenty of sunshine, pleasant, becoming a bit warmer. High today of 84, upper 70s along the lakefront, going down to 56 tonight in some western suburbs. We have 79 degrees right now under mostly sunny skies in Chicago, 73 degrees at the lakefront. It's 12:31.
CBS News Special Report. At least two people were killed in a shooting at a high school in Winder, Georgia. Law enforcement officials say multiple others were injured. A suspect is in custody. WANF-TV reporter Adam Murphy is at Appalachia High School and says it's a chaotic scene outside.
I can tell you I've seen a lot of parents that seem to be running up to try to find their children. We haven't had a chance to speak with any of them yet. We pulled up and like I said, we've kind of anchored down here and we're trying to gather more information. But again, I did spot two ambulances rushing away from the scene.
Former Boston Police Commissioner Ed Davis.
There'll be detectives in the field right now pulling any video from around the area, not only from the school, but also from businesses and any place else around that would show the entry and exit of
CBS News Special Report. I'm Stacy Lynn.
It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are slightly lower right now. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Tim Grisky, Senior Portfolio Strategist at Ingalls & Snyder in New York. Tim, thank you for joining us today. And how are markets interpreting the JOLTS report, that report on job openings that may lend more fuel to the fire that the job market could be slowing down at a dangerous pace?
Well, good afternoon, Rob. Yes, the JOLTS report of job openings was softer than expected, and the prior month was revised down. We've seen soft employment data here for a while, and, you know, we don't know exactly where it's coming from. It could be related to some early pressure from AI, which is supposed to increase everybody's efficiency, but, you know, could result in certainly some job cuts. And in general, you know, the overall economy is a bit softer, and I think that's really what's impacting these jobs numbers right now.
Now, define softer in terms of our experience, because is this softer compared to boom times coming out of the depths of the COVID pandemic, where people were able to name their own price and cross the street for a lot more money and more work from home flexibility? Or is it just returning to the way things were prior to March of 2020?
I think you're right. It really is returning to a more normal environment. We don't have a roaring economy, but we don't have a weak economy here either. And remember, the Fed is out there waiting to lower interest rates. Very likely they do lower interest rates at their next meeting and perhaps again before the end of the year. And those should be big stimuluses to the economy and to the stock market.
Now, there were some fairly steep sell-offs yesterday. Was it entirely tech-driven? And what was leading people to walk away from NVIDIA in particular?
Well, NVIDIA has been a great story, and it's a great company, but it has moved exponentially here. The stock is up so much. Not surprising to see a more volatility in that stock, given how high it's gone. So, you know, profit taking, reducing some positions, that all occurred yesterday, and it really took down pretty much the whole tech sector and to a certain extent most of the rest of the market as well. But this is a great company. It's got a great future ahead of it. And, you know, we think it's should be in every client portfolio.
As an investor looking at the potential for AI, it is a story above and beyond NVIDIA. Yes, you want to be there and have a piece of this company that's making the chips that are powering this revolution. But it seems like a lot of the bets on AI being transformative are being pushed down the road by a couple of years. And that seems also normal when we're talking about a new technology cycle.
Absolutely. Yes, AI shows a lot of promise, but it's not going to happen overnight. Certainly there are early adopters out there using it, but in terms of its real impact on society, we're talking about an extended period of time. I think that's what investors have to realize. These companies are going to do extremely well, the ones exposed to AI. But it's not going to be all clear sailing. And we saw some big profit taking in NVIDIA and other names, similar names, yesterday.
And I would call this the multi-billion-dollar question. That is, going back to the JOLTS report, does that lend more credence to the theory that maybe the Fed is going to cut rates by half a point as opposed to a quarter point at their policy meeting this month?
Well, the market's always pushing for the Fed to lower rates more than expected. But I think Chairman Powell's been very clear. We're talking about a 25 basis point rate cut at the next meeting.
Tim Grisky, Senior Portfolio Strategist at Ingalls & Snyder in New York, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Personal Finance Wednesday, plotting the future of your wealth while you can still enjoy it.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday for planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday. Giving an inheritance while you're alive lets you see your wealth make a difference, benefiting loved ones and charities now, not later. Joining us to explain is Chris Everett, fiduciary financial planner and president of Everett Wealth Solutions in Forest Park, author of the book, The Prescription for a Healthy Retirement. Chris, thank you for joining us today. And if you have an inheritance to give away to so you can enjoy watching it being spent while you're alive, that seems like the dictionary definition of a healthy retirement.
Well, the one thing you said was, if you have it to give away. I mean, I've had people approach me after the fact saying they gave this amount to their kids, but they in no way could have afforded to do it. So that's one level of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum is like you're saying, you know, if you can afford to do it and you want to enjoy it, watch them enjoy it while you're alive. I think that's a beautiful thing. But I think knowing your numbers before you do any of that is just wise counsel.
And then speaking of wise counsel, what obviously inheritance is, it's a touchy subject, or it can be a touchy subject inside of families. And if someone begins to give away inheritance while they're alive, even though their stated goal may be to watch that money be spent in a meaningful way with people they love, could that also potentially cause rifts within families if not handled properly?
Well, you already know the answer is yes. It depends on the family, right?
Right.
Come on. One of the things that I love is that, like, yeah, I don't know what size your estate is, who's listening to me right now, but if you have a very large estate, ask yourself if you want control or not. Because I have clients who are kind of big dogs, and they want control, but they also want to not pay the tax on that control. So there's ways to do that. Then, of course, there's people in the middle who just want to avoid that federal tax. They don't care if they have control or not. So there's trust for that as well. So it really depends on who you are. There's always a creative solution, which I just love.
We're talking about giving away your inheritance early while you're alive with Chris Everett, fiduciary financial planner and president of Everett Wealth Solutions in Forest Park. You also mentioned something earlier in the segment, and that is you have to do a very good job of estimating how much money you're going to need after you give it away. And you said you've talked to some people who gave it away. They enjoyed watching the money being spent, then realized, hey, wait a minute, I needed that too.
Yeah, well, I didn't necessarily say they enjoyed it, because once they realized they did it and they didn't check, they didn't seek counsel, then they realized, oops, big mistake. Or what if you put some of your money in your children's name, which is another mistake that people do, and then that child has an auto accident, and you end up jeopardizing all your accounts? So kind of silly things that can happen out there without the right counsel.
And then generally, if someone is listening right now and they think they can pull it off, they have the figures in their head, what are some good rules of thumb about giving that inheritance away in such a manner that they don't back themselves into a corner?
Sure. Well, obviously, seek counsel from a very astute fiduciary, somebody that has enough experience, that knows and has been through enough of these scenarios. Because if you do give away money, are you giving it away to that person, or probably a child, and it's protected in the way you gave it, so that even though you've given it away, if they end up in an auto accident that's their fault or get sued for whatever reason, are they going to lose this beautiful gift that you just gave?
Yeah, you bring up a very important point. I mean, there are legal responsibilities. And then very quickly, maybe this is not a question that can be answered quickly, and that is, what are some of the tax implications? I mean, we know about the inheritance tax after you pass away, but what are some of the issues involving gifts, a major financial gift to a relative while you're alive?
Well, I mean, I suppose if you go over the limit of what you can gift, then you start invading and chewing away at your deduction later on down the road. That's one thing. Take a look at if you're going to give it in such a way that you can avoid taxes while you're giving it away. You know, a lot of people like to give gifts of stock sometime, because maybe I just had a client give away huge amounts of highly appreciated stock to their kid, because they didn't want to pay the tax on it. But the child could afford that gift if they needed to sell out. So there's just so many ways to do this.
Chris Everett, fiduciary financial planner and president, Everett Wealth Solutions in Forest Park, author of the book, The Prescription for a Healthy Retirement. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up, still to come, it's a sweet cocktail that's creating some serious buzz, especially at the U.S. Open. It's
discussing the news affecting your money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The Honey Deuce, the official cocktail of the U.S. Open tennis tournament in New York, has become a viral sensation, and it's the event's hottest talking point. Joining us to discuss the phenomenon is Izzy Karish, president of Hospitality Works, a.k.a. the restaurant coach in Chicago. Izzy, thank you for joining us today. And the sales figures involving the Honey Deuce are just mind-boggling. I mean, the U.S. Open currently underway in Queens, New York, not too far away from Citi Field, and it's going to surpass $10 million in sales for the Honey Deuce before the event is over on September 8th. Now, Izzy, I've been to cocktail lounges in New York, and I know it's rather expensive compared to Chicago. So $10 million worth of honeydew sales, what's that, two or three drinks?
It is certainly a lot of drinks, and boy, what a boon this is for Grey Goose, because they are, you know, the sponsors and the creators. And what's interesting is the history of this drink. It's been around a little while. I think when they first started, it was $11 a cocktail, and now just a few years later, they have bumped it to $23, up a dollar from last year. So this is a very interesting story, because the hotter the drink gets, the more expensive it gets, the more people buy.
Now, this is really a triumph of the Grey Goose marketing department, because, as you pointed out, this has been around since 2007, when the Grey Goose U.S. Open sponsorship was in its infancy. And I'm sure you've heard a lot of stories over the course of your time of restaurants or bars or liquor companies trying to make a cocktail happen, and that it doesn't necessarily achieve escape velocity into the wider world. But the Honey Deuce did. As a matter of fact, I just saw a commercial with John Legend talking about the Honey Deuce. So this is something that's really starting to take over, and it doesn't happen to everybody.
It doesn't. And certainly, as I said, the drink really came out a couple of years ago. So what's helping it now? Well, I think a lot of social media. People are having fun. It's a great drink. They're doing Instagram. You know, they're doing Facebook. They're, you know, all these different ways they're getting the word out. And then they put the drink in somebody's hand that is famous, you know, and say, try this. And they, you know, take their reaction. So I think it's a combination of they came up with a fun and interesting and great product. And the other part is it's the customers, the consumers who are really pushing it.
And this is also a big winner for Grey Goose. I mean, this is to the U.S. Open now what Woodford Reserve is to the Kentucky Derby. That you can't watch the coverage of the race without seeing lots of fashionable people in their funny hats having mint juleps in May. And now you see the honey melon or the honey whatever it's called the honey deuce in the honey deuce in September.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right, Rob. I think from now on, for the next, I don't know how many years, this will be the drink when people are watching it at home. This is the drink that they're going to be making, you know, just like people do with the drinks from the Kentucky Derby when they watch it at home.
Izzy Karish, president of Hospitality Works, a.k.a. the restaurant coach in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today.